Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan Burke Butler joins us once again.
Sean, how are you?
Right, Guatemala, we're going to go to first. And they've scrapped compulsory car insurance.
Well, they never had it in the first place.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that Guatemalans are released from that tyranny.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I thought this was interesting because we talk about car insurance a lot in this country.
Yeah.
Generally, the price of it, I believe, more than anything. But in Guatemala, that's why I thought, you know, people would be surprised to find out that they don't actually have compulsory car insurance in Guatemala, which is quite interesting. And it won't be in for a while. They announced last Monday week that they were going to make it compulsory, but there was riots. And following 2 days of what were sometimes very violent riots involving the public and police and people getting injured, the president and his government appears to have backed down. So President Bernardo Arevalo has withdrawn the decree that he made last Monday week, which would have made car insurance compulsory for cars, lorries, buses, motorbikes. And everybody would have had to get it, but they didn't want to. It seems at this particular point. I mean, you've got to bear in mind, Guatemala, 55% of the population live below the poverty line.
Yeah.
And one big mistake that they made here, well, there was a couple of big mistakes. One was they announced it off the bat. They had a deadline of the 1st of May. What's that? 6 weeks to get your car insurance. And they didn't tell people how much it was going to cost. So people freaked out, basically, and were sort of saying, look, this is a cost that we can't afford. And why do we need it anyway? Now, they certainly do need it. There's two reasons why it was brought in. One of the reasons is the rate of death from car accidents, is very high in Guatemala. After Venezuela, it's the second highest in the region, right? And for comparison's sake, Ireland has about 5 deaths out of per 100,000 population on the roads. Okay, Guatemala has 23 per 100,000.
My word,
population, right? So it's quite significant. And also, last month there was a terrible accident which you might have seen, where a bus was involved. It plunged over the side of a bridge and into a river.
Yeah.
70 people were on that bus, and 55 died. It was remarkable that not everybody was killed, and that there were some survivors. So this was kind of the impetus for this change. The president said, look, you voted me in to bring in change. This is where we need to start. And I'm convinced this is still something that we need to do. Now, it's a big loss for him, but he's eked out a little bit of a win in that the people that were representing the protesters have decided they'll come and they'll talk to the president about implementing compulsory insurance within the year.
Okay, all right.
And so we'll see how it goes. But an interesting one to be writing over.
Okay. Well, I would imagine if such a large proportion of the population are living in poverty, probably a lot of them don't even have cars.
True enough. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And Iceland. We don't go to Iceland very often, actually.
No.
Not much happens there. But a minister has resigned over a previous relationship.
Yes. And this is something that very much has happened. And it's causing a bit of controversy and consternation in Iceland amongst the government. And there's still time to run. And there's still something to run in this, I think. So it involves the Minister for Children, the now ex-Minister for Children, a woman by the name of Astildur Thorsdóttir. And she was in a relationship when she was younger. So she's now in her 50s. But a number of years ago, when she was 22, she was a counsellor for a religious youth group, okay?
Mm.
And she got into a relationship with a 15-year-old boy.
Ouch.
And they had a child together. So a year later, she was 23, he was 16, they had a child. And remarkably, for a country that has a population of 300,000 people, it was kept a secret. Now, this is even though the child, or the young boy in this case, they lived together for a year, right? So I sort of suspect that this might have been an open secret and it just hadn't been reported on. And now that this woman came into power, that it might have been revealed. Anyway, the story broke on Thursday night. It was broken by a news agency called RUV. And evidently RUV had approached the minister, Minister Thorsdóttir, about this story, because she gave an interview basically to give her side of the story, to get her retaliation in first, as my father would say. And she sort of, the details have come out that they, as I said, they lived together for a year, and then she got into a new relationship, which is her current relationship, and the young boy was then you know, cast out, basically. Yeah. And he had no access to the child, even though he was paying maintenance for 18 years. Presumably when he got older, he had to pay maintenance, and he had gone to courts to get access and this kind of thing as well. So the whole thing broke. Obviously, she was called in by the Prime Minister, a woman by the name of Kristrun Frostadottir, and she resigned. Now, I imagine she resigned at gunpoint. And remarkably, she says she's not going to give up her seat, which I think, I'm not sure that that will last for very long. She could also be in legal trouble. Okay, so the age of consent in Iceland is 15.
Okay.
But it is illegal to have sex with a person under 18 if you are their teacher or mentor.
Yeah.
And as
the
counsellor, she certainly falls into that category.
Yes.
So I think she could be in a bit of trouble here.
Remarkable that it was kept secret then, all that
yeah,
time.
I can't imagine that there weren't people who knew. And it just, you know, it just came out. One of those open secrets, you know.
Yeah, but I suppose becoming Minister for Children is when I assume that the news agency thought, now this is a legitimate story.
Well, 100% legitimate story. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right, Saudi Arabia, where we're going to go to next. And a depressingly familiar story. Every time there's a World Cup coming on, the first reported death.
Yeah, and that's, I suppose, why I wanted to have a look at it. Qatar was the last World Cup, and there was hundreds of people who died as a result of the building of the stadiums there. And people forget that. So I think it's worth reminding people that this is happening again.
Yeah.
And even the headline, I think I got this from The Guardian, right? The Guardian said, first reported death on World Cup building site. The expectation there from the headline writer is obviously there will be more.
Yes.
Because as far as they're concerned, safety standards and the conditions that some of these people are working in are not good enough, right? There was an investigation done by the Daily Mail last year which found that some of the migrant workers at this particular stadium where this accident happened were enduring shocking conditions. So they were working 10 hours a day under 45 degrees of heat. They had to pay fees in order to get into the country, right? You know, the kind of thing, you know, you're sold this thing, come to Saudi Arabia, or come to this country, we'll look after you. Oh, you get there and you have to start paying fees. So ridiculous carry on. This poor individual is a Pakistani worker in his 30s, I think, a man by the name of Muhammad Arshad, had three children who now don't have a father and an income, although he will be compensated. What appears to have happened is he was working on a stadium called the Aramco Stadium in a town called Al Kabour, and this happened on the 12th of March. He was on an upper level. He was working with two other men. And in a statement from the construction group, it's a Belgian construction group, actually, that are the contractors here, they basically said that the three were equipped with personal fall arrest systems, but one worker was not connected to an anchor point at the time of the incident and fell, sustaining severe injuries. Now, he actually was brought to hospital, but he died shortly after his arrival. So,
What kind of temperatures are they working in?
Yeah, up to 40, 45 degrees in some instances. Yeah,
yeah. And but now, that's the first death that's been reported.
Yeah.
So we don't know, there may have been others and injuries as well.
Yes, I'm sure there has been. And, you know, not enough. This is happening when? What are they building? They're building, I think, 11 venues that are being built at the moment right across Saudi Arabia in time for the World Cup in 2034. So, you know what, we've 9 years of this to go.
And is it known where most of these labourers are coming from?
I would assume that if we go by Qatar, that a lot of them would be coming from Pakistan, areas like that. But I can't say for sure, Sean, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, they probably don't publish figures on that. Right. OK, Australia we're going to go to next, where I didn't even know you could do this. But this guy, like, you can buy plutonium online.
Yeah, this is a bizarre story. It involves a 24-year-old Sydney native who lives in an apartment with his parents. I think that's an important part of the story. Emmanuel Lydon is his name. And he was charged, and he's been convicted. Well, he had admitted his guilt under Australia's Nuclear Non-Proliferation Act. Okay, so that's been in place apparently since 1987.
Okay,
and I read in one source that he was the first person to be charged and convicted under this. Now, he could be sent to prison for 10 years. what was he doing? He was trying to collect all of the elements of the periodic table. He's a collector. He used to collect coins and stamps and various different things. And he decided he wanted to have all the elements of the periodic table. So he was missing a few. And he went to a website that in the United States and he began ordering these elements in about May of 2022, right? And he was doing it for about a year. And 10 of these orders came through, okay? And they got through the Australian border force, right? And so there apparently was no problem. The 11th order came through, and that contained mercury and another element that I can't remember now. And that was stopped by the Australian border force, right? So they saw that package and they said, no way, that can't go to anywhere else. That's very dangerous, right? However, it seems that it somehow slipped through the net and it was delivered. The package was delivered by UPS. They still mistakenly delivered the shipment to Lydon. The UPS got in touch with Lydon when they realised what they had done and they told them, listen, we need to get that back. And he said, fine, no problem. As long as you come and collect it, that's fine by me. And he even asked them, why did they send it to him if they knew that it was illegal? Yeah. Right? How did it get through in the first place? And they said, oh, our mistake. So that happened in June. That last package went through in June of 2023. In August of the same year, he gets a knock on the door, or he probably got his door kicked in, and you've got Australian Border Force, firefighters, police, paramedics, all in hazmat suits coming in, down on the floor. God. The whole neighbourhood had to be cleared out, and he was arrested. And now he's been charged, as I said, for importing radioactive material into the country. And he could get 10 years.
Yeah, so, but he is definitely going to go to trial with this, is it?
It's gone to trial. It's the sentence hearing is April the 11th. So he's admitted his guilt. Now, his lawyer has, to me anyway, judging by the quotes, has seemingly done a decent job here so far. He's basically pointed out, look, this was a guy who was an innocent collector and was a science nerd whose offences were committed out of pure naivety. He pointed out what he had said to the UPS driver, you know, why did you send it to me if it was illegal? How did it get through the net? And he said that the response was way over the top, you know. So they were looking for plutonium, which had apparently come in the 10 previous orders. And that's what they were worried about. He even went and he told his employers that he was being investigated against the advice of his lawyer because he wanted to be honest with them, and they turned around and they fired him.
And what did he do for a living?
He was a train driver, or he was training to be a train driver. So it's interesting that the lawyer brought that up in court, actually, because I think he might be lining up a tasty, unfair dismissal case there should Lydon be set free, which I hope he will be, I have to say.
I mean, it was. And this time next year, we'll be discussing the Netflix dramatisation of it. What a story. Vietnam, we're going to go to finally, where sales of a particular doll have plunged. Why?
Yeah, so you know about the 9-dash line? So the 9-dash line is this thing on Chinese maps, which basically is a line. It's been there since after the Second World War, which basically represents what they believe to be their territory in the South China Sea, right? And all of the countries in that area dispute it. So Vietnam, Philippines, I think even Bhutan, China, they're all in dispute over this, right? And it's caused massive problems over the years for various different representations. And I'll go through some of those in a minute. But in this instance, there was a doll called the Baby 3 doll, which was Chinese made. And it was doing very well, particularly at the end of last year, between September and December, right? Sales of over nearly $1.5 million of this doll, very popular. But then people started to point out that on one of the dolls, there was a heart-shaped design. Now, I've actually put a picture of it up on my Instagram account, at @DeBurkleButler, so people can judge for themselves, all right, and have a look at it. Heart-shaped design, which they say resembles the 9-dash line. And then, of course, people jump on that on social media, and all of a sudden, it's the Chinese trying to, you know, use propaganda against our children and all of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's been withdrawn. The sales of it began to plummet. Retailers basically said, oh, well, we can't be selling this anyway. And it looks like it has been withdrawn because of this. Now, as I said, it's not the first time this 9-dash line has come up for scrutiny in Vietnam. You might remember in the Barbie film, there was controversy because it was apparently a line or a couple of lines on a map near China were shown, and Barbie was banned in Vietnam as a result. I think they went back and they took out that scene and then they allowed it to be played. There was another film called Uncharted in 1922, which was banned because it featured the map with the nine dash line on it as well. So they take it very seriously in Vietnam.
Okay, indeed. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week, Jonathan?
Yeah, a few things coming up. Obviously, the this breaking news around Ukraine and Russia. I think another thing to be looking out for is what's going on in Turkey. Is very interesting over the last few days and what's going to happen with Erdogan and those protests. Later today, we'll hear news about the Brazilian Supreme Court, who's considering a case against Jair Bolsonaro as well. Echoes of a certain Donald Trump in that particular instance. And then on Thursday, there's the deportation hearing for that Columbia graduate, Mahmoud Khalil, in Louisiana. So
he's
we'll know.
Hugely controversial there as well. Okay. Right, Jonathan, thanks a million. Sean. As ever, Jonathan DeBurka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.